This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Shaoning, and joining me in the studio, of course, is Philip C.
Good morning. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. Well, as Philip announced, it is Monday, the 29th of March, and it's just gone past 6 o'clock in the morning.
Did you have a good weekend?
It didn't seem long enough, I have to say.
I agree.
Right? Fully it seemed like agree. A very, very short weekend. I don't know why it was my mind, or maybe I had quite a few things to do. But I did notice I had to drive to PJ twice, and it was packed.
What recession? Seriously. I went to a couple of malls. It was packed to the brim. Hard to find parking space again.
Mm-hmm.
What recession are we going through?
I don't know. I don't know whether we are in our little bubble. And I fear that sometimes because we live in urban KL, right? And the little triangle I call my life revolves around tend to be, I would have to admit, rather, you know, okay, middle class neighborhood. So maybe we don't see it. The other thing that worries me is everyone is out and about, you know. Is everybody practicing their SOPs? That's the question mark. And we did have our DG, Tan Sri Noor Hisham, say that the R0 has gone back above 1, which concerns me because every time we have a relaxation, are we going to repeat? Is history going to repeat itself whereby we forget what we're supposed to do and then the infection rates creep up? And then once again, we get a lockdown. And is it because everyone just thinks, vaccination is here, so why do I have to really care?
That's right. And also the concern is maybe the other flip side is it plateauing? You don't really see a downward trend.
No,
the
it's like
all
a,
hovering at about the 1,000, 2,300 level at the
moment.
Yeah,
but we
for quite
need to keep those numbers down. We need to bring it below 1,000, you know.
Yep.
In an ideal world, we'll be having, you know, no infections, but it's honestly going to be a huge challenge. So for those who are going out, I can understand why, because everyone has a bit of cabin fever. I mean, lockdown fatigue is real. But please practice those standard SOPs, because I actually don't see people practicing it very strictly anymore. I don't know whether you've observed that as well.
It's either all right. You used to have temperature checks and mysogetra.
Yeah, but you people still do that. They go through the motions. I
see
realize.
One either happening. You either do one or the other, not
okay.
both.
I see people going through the motions because honestly, human beings are like, if you train them, they'll do it. But it's when they get into the restaurant or when they get into the mall or when they get into the shops, they don't practice that 1 meter distancing anymore. And then, you know, that's the real test, actually, I think.
I've actually seen people not get it done right at the onset at my sujatra. So like someone's clicking and it's not reading the code.
They don't care.
They just say, go, which is quite bad.
Anyway, what stories do we have later, Philip?
Well, talking about shopping malls, we're going to have a discussion on retail nationalism. I'm sure you've heard about the Xinjiang cotton.
Yes, yes. So, it's like all out, like some of the movie stars, the Chinese movie stars say that they're going to stop you wearing these brands.
Blown up,
right? And I'll be talking about the 888 rule.
Really? Does that exist?
I don't know the fart rule, right? We'll find out. As always, get in touch with us via WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We would really like to hear from you. We'll have more for you in a few minutes, but first here's $4 by US Girls. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:08 in the morning. Of course, it's Monday the 29th of March, and that song was $4 by US Girls, which is what I hope you have. You don't have in your bank account because you should have a lot more. a lot more.
What can you buy with $4 here?
Well,
a mocha frappuccino, I think.
Times
small
four.
One.
Well, this morning, because I've got my Bloomberg on, times 4.14, 60, well, actually close to 17 ringgit. Doesn't buy you very much nowadays, does
mocha
it?
Frappuccino la, from Starbucks.
I don't know. You all know I refuse to pay for expensive coffee unless I'm sitting down with some friends. So, 17 ringgit, well, maybe you get a dinner plate at KFC.
Yeah.
That's about it.
You
inflation,
can't do a nice meal now with
no,
that for sure.
Inflation really, really bites. But in the meantime, this morning, we are looking at this interesting article about how you perhaps have to sell your soul if you're going to make more money. Well, somewhat related to it. It's called it's in The Guardian, and it's the 888 rule, which apparently could give us the perfect work-life balance. And the question is, why aren't more of us following it? And it's an op-ed piece, actually.
Yeah, Adrian Charles is a pretty famous journalist in The Guardian UK, wrote that he shared his experience of a woman who grew up in the former Yugoslavia, who told him that they used to live their day by 3/8, 8 hours of work, 8 hours of free time, 8 hours of sleep. I think it goes to show that's the reason why it's called the former Republic of Yugoslavia.
It was a communist / socialist country, maybe, where, you know, you didn't have to, there was no capitalism. No matter how hard you worked, everybody got the same thing, right? The same house, the same pay, the same entitlement. So maybe there wasn't any this sense of like, do more, do more, do more. They obviously didn't hear about the Jack Ma kind of culture.
996.
Yeah.
Which 9 to 9.
Yeah.
6 days a week.
Which is to work yourself to death. That's all the other.
All the Goldman Sachs 90 days by the junior bankers.
Well, I think, you know, it's always going to be this huge debate. What is that perfect work-life balance? Mm. And I want to tell people out there, it doesn't exist. It really doesn't exist. It, to me, it's a myth. I know I'm crushing people's hearts. I'm crushing people's dreams.
Wow. At 6 in the morning.
At 6 in the morning, people who have gotten up at 3:20 are telling you work-life balance is a myth.
If you are waking up at 6 in the morning heading to work, you fully appreciate what Xiaoning is saying. It is truly a myth. But 8-8-8, right? 8 hours of work, 8 hours of rest, 8 hours of sleep. I think the one we're compromising the most is the rest side.
Yes.
I believe. Of the,
for me,
of the
sleep.
3-8s.
For me, sleep and rest.
Yeah. But rest is, I feel, the one that's affected more. And it's not only the actual work that people have pressure on. It's that even when you're doing rest, you're actually thinking about work. So you might actually theoretically be doing the work that you, which is 8 hours, but the 8 hours of rest is being disrupted by thinking about the work, what's coming up next and all that. I think that's the big challenge that we are having now.
And you're right, actually, Philip, in the sense that it's made worse by the fact that when we are resting, we are constantly looking at our phone or at our computers, right? Because there's always some message to catch up on. There's an email that you need to follow up on. People WhatsApp you without hesitation and you feel obliged and sometimes you have no choice. I would like to think that I have the right to not answer, but I always think that this requires an immediate response. And maybe it's also the nature of the work that we're in. I think, to be fair, some people have achieved work-life balance. Good for them. But for certain careers, I say it's a myth because it's almost near impossible. Let's say you're in media, like us news. And if there's really a big story that breaks at, you know, midnight, I won't be surprised. There'll be many WhatsApps that I have to you know, reply to. Because I need to prepare for, let's say, the show tomorrow, right? I need to respond to it immediately. I need to get the news out. Or in my old line, for example, in, you know, when it comes to investments, if there's really breaking news, you know, like the CEO of a famous company did something wrong, there's a credit default, corporate espionage, whatever, I have to cover it. I have to know what to do when I come into the office at 9 a.m. Do I sell the share? Do I keep it? Do I know what happened? Find out a little bit more, you know, arrange for the stock to be sold, tell the brokers. So there's this work-life balance thing. I don't know. I mean, you ideally want to, but there is this thing called reality, right? So I don't know. Do you achieve it better than me? Maybe you do.
Two things. The question about work-life balance is how you structure it, right? So if you have a standard 8 hours, 9 to 5, that's going to be very hard for us. But if you're integrating it to say, maybe these times I want some downtime during this hour, but I compensate it with other hours later, that would be ideal, which means you integrate the work and rest a bit, but you must compartmentalize well.
Okay, that's one thing I do extremely badly.
And one issue you raised earlier, which is a very valid point, is devices. We've merged all our life and work into a single device. Remember the time when there was a BlackBerry?
Yes, I had a few.
What was that? The BlackBerry. But it was quite good.
It was the beginning of the end, Philip. There was the beginning of the downfall for all of us.
Exactly.
Okay?
But at least you could separate out
work
and life. Well, it was hard, but I knew people who were able to like put the BlackBerry into the drawer and not look at it for some time.
So now we have our one smartphone, which is the downfall, everything.
I feel that's a big problem because now WhatsApp conversations, Signal, Telegram are all happening interrelated and interlinked.
Maybe then the simple thing is to have another phone with another line and then that make that your office kind of phone, your work phone.
Could be, but that doesn't solve your problem, Xiaoning, about, you know, you have work that's thinking about 24/7.
Yeah.
It doesn't solve that.
It doesn't solve it. So like, for example, this morning, we are going to cover the Suez Canal. The interesting story is there and you can tune in at 7:30 where we're going to be talking about that with Oi Lian Hin, for example. He's the chairman of the Shipping Association of Malaysia. And that's an example of how I never switched off. Because the whole night I was thinking, what happens if they dislodge the ship? We have to change our story. We have to change the questions that we're going to ask Mr. Uyi, right?
That's right. What happened at the UMNO assembly later?
Yeah, and that's going to be happening at 7:45. So exactly, all these stories require constant updating, right? And I don't know whether anyone has better ideas in terms of how they can achieve this work-life balance. And is this 8-8-8 rule maybe fiction? Or do, when you think about it, is this how we should really be living our lives? Because let's face it, I think, you know, COVID-19, working from home, somehow, and the fact that actually we have such little social life means that actually I work more than ever because I have fewer distractions.
Yes.
And I don't know, is that the same for you?
Yeah, I think that's a big problem. So I force myself to do other things. But one thing I'm quite hopeful of is I hope the workers in the Suez Canal, they don't adopt 888. I hope they're doing 24-0 to try and excavate the
Have you seen the pictures of how huge this ship is and how tiny these excavators are? It looks like a little, I don't know, very cute, like almost a scene out of a Lego site or something. But let us know what you think about whether you can achieve this 888 balance in your life. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Or, of course, you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll have some messages. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Come Undone by the uber cool Duran Duran. For those old enough to remember, it was Simon Le Bon, Nick Rhodes and John Taylor.
For a while, I thought it was a kind of exotic fruit. Exotic fruit. Can I just say, I hope you're not feeling coming undone on a Monday morning.
I want to. I want to go back to bed, actually. But you know, when this band came out, what, in the 1980s, I was like, wow, how unusual is their like electric kind of sounds, you know? And the band members had the coolest kind of hairstyles, like with like a punk kind of thing going on. And when I hear this song, it really brings me back to that kind of era in my life.
Did you feel rebellious when you listened to the song,
Charmaine? I was like 7 or 8, a kid in, you know, PJ. How rebellious did you think I was? But in the meantime, talking about rebellious, there's this article that we're looking at, and it's actually from the BBC, right? And it's about the Xinjiang cotton, and it's the article is entitled Xinjiang Cotton, Western Clothes Brands Vanish as Backlash Grows.
This has blown up extremely fast. I was like, no, nothing happened, and then within 3 days, boom, it started with Burberry. And because I think a lot of the famous actresses boycotted it. Then now
these are the Chinese actresses.
The Chinese actresses.
Okay, so let's put this into context. Yeah. Normally in newspaper articles or in these kind of stories, it's the West that boycotts something, right? And it's the Western stars that say, okay, we're not going to use this because, correct, you know, it harms the environment. Animals were endangered in the process. There's some ethical issues about this. But now this is the reverse. So for the first time, maybe it's not the first time, but increasingly more so, we are seeing Chinese mainland stars saying they're not going to use these products.
Correct. And I think these brands are not using Xinjiang cotton on the allegation that they're using forced labor, right? Using the Uyghurs to pick the cotton, essentially. Xinjiang cotton is apparently high value. It produces 85% of China's cotton production and actually 20% of global production, in fact. So it is quite highly sought cotton. And Western brands, starting with Burberry, now with Nike and H&M, have slowly been or have been boycotting or removing it from its production line, the Xinjiang cotton, and the Chinese retailers and consumers are doing a massive backlash.
Yeah, so much so that H&M has been forced, I think, to close some of their stores in China. And actually, China has been a huge market for them. They've had a very ambitious store expansion plan there.
Yep.
So clearly, you know, this has repercussions for, I think, for all retailers, a huge growing market.
Correct. In fact, not only retail stores, but Chinese online marketplaces, Tmall, Taobao, they've actually removed these products from their marketplace as well, which is a very swift reaction, which only took place 3 days ago. And they're not even in the Google Maps equivalent in China.
Oh, okay.
In some of these retail stores, they've been removed quite fast. In return, even some other Western brands like Muji, they're now proudly promoting Xinjiang cotton.
Okay, because I mean, even the state broadcaster CCTV, that's the Chinese broadcaster, said that H&M, a multinational firm with headquarters in Sweden, had miscalculated in trying to be a righteous hero and that it must pay a heavy price for its wrong actions. Clearly, this hints that the state is encouraging this kind of behavior, right? Asking its citizens to boycott the products, kind of telling its, you know, the big shopping portals to kind of, you know, ban these products.
Yeah.
I don't know. To me, it's a very odd place to be, because the question should be, are y'all investigating these allegations? You know, if there's any hint of it in the first place that really forced labor is used, should somebody be, someone from the state actually be denying it and firstly saying no or looking into these allegations? Because I do believe the BBC did a very thorough investigative report on it and found it to be the case.
Yes, but I think the Chinese government, I think, will not back down. Mm. Just to contrast two things, this is where you see the Chinese government getting very involved in economic activities. If you extend its reach, it's beyond the classic just boycotting, but also how they influence certain business decisions. We've heard about Alipay and Tencent. But you compare this retail nationalism versus maybe what you see even in Malaysia, where we had this Malaysia boleh buy Malaysian goods, or US also beginning to do, let's manufacture in the US. That's a bit different. That's driving a certain positive agenda. This is a pretty negative background. Backlash that you're seeing happening.
But I think as a consumer, you know, you can have a view, and I think it's a fair view. Mm. If you decide that you don't want to put your money into the hands of a business that you don't agree with, be it because you think that they are, you know, they have ethical question marks, they perhaps support certain, I would say things like they're not very environmentally conscious, for example, and you disagree, then you as a consumer have every right to not spend your money there. So I think for the Chinese, it's fine. If you don't agree, don't put your money in H&M. Don't put your money in Nike. Don't put your money in Burberry. Yeah. We are consumers. We have a choice. But we should also have the choice to find out the stories behind it and to have more information, because we also need to have that check and balance so that we know the whole, all the allegations, all the stories, and not just have one perspective in life. But let us know what you think. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we have the news bulletin, and to take us there is 96 Tears by The Stranglers. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:39 in the morning, and you're listening to us, Shaoning and Philip, on The Morning Run, of course. And that song was Motion Sickness by Phoebe Bridges.
A sickness I look forward to when I start travelling on air or by sea.
Again. Hopefully soon, right?
That's a sickness I yearn for. Yes.
I yearn
the feeling of vomiting on the perch of vomiting.
You know what? I can drive you around town, Philip. You feel kind of sick with me in charge. That's the comment. Why is your driving so bad? Why are you so jerky? Why do you keep braking? Don't need to fly. Just get in my car later.
Get on a car with
you.
Yeah.
Great. Then in about 5 minutes, that sense of motion sickness will come rushing back, and I'll bring some bath bags just in case. But in the meantime, we're looking at some of the international stories this morning. And over the weekend, Myanmar actually suffered its deadliest day of protests since the coup began on February 1st. And this time, over 100 people were reportedly killed by the Burmese junta on Saturday, which was also, ironically, National Armed Forces Day.
Yeah, so the weekend crackdown has led to condemnation of the junta by defense chiefs of 12 countries, including the US, UK, Germany and Japan. In a rare joint statement, the group said, a professional military follows international standards for conduct and is responsible for protecting, not harming, the people it serves. Now, more than 400 people have been killed in the military crackdown, according to the Assistance Association for Political Prisoners, and another 2,428 have been detained.
Now, despite the deadly tolls on Saturday, the top military leaders continued celebrations in conjunction with this Armed Forces Day. Images from state TV shared on social media showed military officials, and including junta chief Min Aung Hlaing, wearing white uniforms and bow ties, attending a gala dinner. Now, the day's festivities included a military parade, which was attended by Russia's Deputy Defense Minister, who arrived in Myanmar on Friday, and at least seven other countries sent representatives, including China, India and Thailand. And on Thursday, the UK and US imposed sanctions against two military link conglomerates.
Really tone deaf, in my view, of what you see happening on the day of the deepest bloodshed, and you have this kind of celebration taking place. It also shows the division happening between, you know, those countries that are showing their disdain, which is mostly the Western democracies and perhaps Japan and Australia, but really the Asian neighbors, which is very telling, right? Basically did put their support in, right? China, India, Thailand. So I really am wondering to see, as we had a conversation, how does UK, US, or even these Western economies really can put pressure on Myanmar when
economic sanctions.
Economic sanctions. Yeah. When your neighbors are kind of not really doing much to say this.
Yeah, I think even in ASEAN, the response has been quite muted. I mean, they have said that they're not in favor of this, but they haven't really come out to criticize the military very strongly, except maybe Indonesia has been a little bit more firm in their response, but the rest of ASEAN, quite, as usual, the gentle approach. But I think when it comes to the military junta, face it, they have been in charge of Burma for what, 30, 40 years? They don't really care, if you ask me. You know, in terms of what the world thinks of them, they have never really cared, because if they did, they wouldn't have managed to hang on to power for so long. Perhaps what will really impact them is if economic sanctions really begin to hurt them, the corporates that they run, and of course, eventually, unfortunately, the citizens of Myanmar.
So the debate here is, yes, economic sanctions are important, but because it's quite a closed economy relatively, neighbouring economic sanctions, I think, have to have the deepest bite. If you look at North Korea, which has been quite insular and hasn't gone global, what really drove some relaxation is when China put pressure on North Korea, but you don't see that happening with Burma yet.
Well, the two largest, I suppose, inflow of FDI actually come from two countries, Singapore being the largest. Now, that's a very interesting thing that I think many people don't realise. And the second, of course, is being China. So perhaps until we see some noise coming out from these two governments saying that they're not very happy with what's going on and the bloodshed is thoroughly unnecessary, I think, unfortunately, life might go on.
True.
And there are promises that elections will be held within the year, but really, I'm going to watch this space, because I don't know whether it will really happen. They will come up with maybe another excuse and it will be delayed.
Well, think about it, Thailand. When was the last election it held? And Thailand is run by generals at the moment.
Yes, I mean, it has a government, technically.
So it's very hard for them to call a pot calling a kettle black.
Yeah. But as usual, let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, of course, the front pages of our newspapers and online portals. We'll be back after these messages. Don't go away. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Love Machine by Shocking Blue. It's 6:48 in the morning and you're listening to The Morning Run with Philip C and I'm Wong Xiao Ning. Now, in front of us is, of course, all the daily newspapers plus the online portals, but I think the hot news over the weekend, of course, was the UMNO General Assembly, which, by the way, UMNO is celebrating its 75th anniversary.
Yes, we were asking this question, are they a governing or opposition party?
Well, at the moment they're the governing, they're still part of PN, right, for the moment.
It didn't sound like that in the General Assembly, to be fair.
It didn't. It's like, we're going in alone, okay? We're going to do it by ourselves. You know, and in the background, I almost heard Frank Sinatra singing.
My way.
Yeah. But we'll see. And it's something we will be talking to with Bridget Welsh later in the morning at 7:45. So do tune in, because we're going to go deep into the General Assembly and maybe unpick all the nuances. Actually, they weren't that nuanced, by the way.
Yes, exactly. They were pretty blunt. It's just that there were many conflicting messages there. Although I think we're going to concentrate on what the UMNO president has to say later.
Yeah, interesting stuff. But in the meantime, what are the other headlines you're looking at?
I have something a bit old where PN is not afraid of Undi 18, just being realistic, says our prime minister.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Well, for those who missed it, on Friday, we did have a call with the MUDA founding member, Syed Saddiq. Of course, you know, he really, this Undi 18 was his pet project.
He's seeing red, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure. And, you know, so you can listen to that podcast on our BFM app or on Spotify. You know, he was very vocal about, you know, his views on Undi 18. And I personally, I'm a big fan of Undi 18. I think young people should be given a voice. I mean, if you can marry, you can drive a car, you can...
You can most certainly vote.
You can most certainly vote. And I don't understand, just because your age doesn't mean that, you know, the excuse that you're not mature enough.
That's... I do want to quote our Prime Minister. Some say PN is afraid. We are not afraid. In fact, I'm confident that a large portion of youngsters will support the government. But what can we do? He says at a press conference.
Well, you can vaccinate 500,000 people in a very short space of time. You managed to roll it all out. I don't see why you can't kind of have the processes in place to allow young people to vote. And it's something The Age also has said in their one of my favourite columns, Frankly Speaking. He says, MCO, no excuse to delay Undi 18.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I think, well, we'll see. You know, we'll see what's happening. What else is catching your eye?
Well, I'm just a bit of a data freak.
You don't say.
Well, we've passed a 500,000 injection mark for COVID vaccines. What's interesting is if you break down the 566,000, 440,000 first dose, but a very high percentage of second doses, 118,000.
Okay.
So nearly 20% of our doses are actually second dose of the vaccine. If you compare with other countries in the US and the United States, actually our percentage of second dose is quite high, which is showing that the government is quite focused in getting phase one going, which is the medical professionals. Now, let's just get that done and dusted, complete that, and then we move on to phase two. Yeah.
I think our, you know, Mosti Minister Kari Jamaluddin also came out to say that kudos to him. He's rolled it out very aggressively. And he's been on all sorts of social media to kind of push the vaccination agenda forward. He's also basically said, right, that economic frontliners might actually get their vaccination jabs earlier rather than sooner. I think partially maybe is it because phase two is a little bit slower in terms of registrations?
Yes, I think that's the frustration because now only 30% of people have registered onto MySujatra. And you hear a lot of noise in the past few days, actually. But why is it we're not getting more people registered onto MySujatra? And that seems to be a frustration by the government.
Yeah, whether it's you know, maybe more needs to be done on a community level to get people to register.
It's a good point because there are stories out there in the US where there are actually people walking on the ground, going knocking at apartment doors and flat complexes to get you registered for the vaccine.
Yeah, I think I heard that on the Journal podcast, right? And it was very interesting because what they did was, you know, for some of the elderly people, and they focus on the, I think, the Latino group. So they had people who speak the Spanish fluently to go and speak to these elderly people and explain to them. And what they did was they brought the vaccination to them. So they had a van downstairs and the elderly could just come down the following week.
Yeah.
And, you know, they actually very, and I heard like, you know, sound bites of it, and they're very calmly talking to these elderly people throughout the whole process. And even after they were injected to find out how they felt, did they feel
they
okay?
They checked in with them.
Yeah. And I think that's important because let's face it, there will be some vaccine hesitancy and that's normal. But I think people just need to be reassured that if you have any side effects, it's very mild. It's like a pain in your arm, maybe a slight fever, but for most people it'll just go away and you'll be fine, you know. And you know, if you don't communicate with people in the way that they understand on an emotional level, sometimes you might not get the herd immunity you want.
That's right. I think there was a debate last time that okay, maybe it's getting influencers, social media stars to kind of talk about it, and we've actually seen that in the Malaysian government where they're getting athletes and actually superstars to kind of promote it. But perhaps to reach out to the more vulnerable, it's to go down to the ground and talk to them as community.
That's for
members.
Sure, because I don't see my parents looking at the Instagram pages to find out which are the biggest Insta stars who have taken the vaccine or if not. But it's all from the local papers we have this morning. Coming up next, this is 7 a.m. News Bulletin, followed by more business news and analysis where we'll be finding out where global markets are heading with Kingsley Jones, Elf Jevons Global. But first, here's You May Be Right by Billy Joel. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.